Bucharest, Romania. Reading coffee. Under a ragged coat lies wisdom. One of my earliest memories is of Lydia, our Bessarabian gardener, coming into our house to read my mother's fortune in a coffee cup. First, Lydia directed, "Drink it down and stir what's left, because it's your future." Once my mother finished, Lydia took her cup and turned it upside down on a napkin. The silt from the thick Turkish coffee spilled down on the insides of the cup and left patterns, like lace, like rivers. Then, Lydia cradled the cup in the palms of her hands, almost in a caress. She looked deep into it the way one might look at a storm across a lake. Or into firelight. If a white rivulet is interrupted by a black blotch, it means something is going to happen to you on a trip. If a smudge matched a certain pattern as the silt descended, it might be a serpent, an enemy who'd sting you in a few days, embarrass you. A dog shape meant a friend was near. In the early 1950s, we moved into our gray stone two-story house on Herestrau No. 12, and Lydia came with us. This was the house where I remember being happy. It had been donated by a dispossessed Armenian merchant after the war. Upon arrival, my parents discarded everything, from the stained glass windows to a Spanish suite upholstered in red Cordoba leather and Louis XV furniture, something they came to regret later. Beery, my pet lamb and closest friend, liked to eat the ivy that crept up the walls, and I loved to make fantasies and stories out of the vines and clouds as they ran together at the top of my window. Lydia made a pen for Beery in our tulip garden, near my seesaw. When Daddy Stalin died in 1953, our country went into mourning with the rest of the communist bloc. Special music was played on the radio for months in honor of him. But before too long, whispers on the wind suggested not everyone was so sad. Things were changing. Lydia, sensing this, began to wear a clove of garlic inside a handkerchief with knots tied in all four corners. She told us she carried it around to reverse any curses. Though she'd substituted socialism for religion in her girlhood, my mother began to call on Lydia more and more. Having no gun, it was the only thing she could turn to in this land of organized atheism. But my mother was not alone in this. Before it was all over, Romanians everywhere sought answers frantically in coffee cups, tea leaves, tarot cards, even kernels of corn tossed furtively behind their desks. Some of my mother's friends began to drop in for these early morning coffees. They never discussed events or names, but everybody knew what it was all about. If the bottom of your cup was too white, you might be a boring person, but at least you were safe. Sometimes Lydia would stick one of her long tapered fingers into the black goo at the bottom of a seeker's cup and say it meant her soul was in shadow, that she had problems. If a lot of black clung to the bottom for dear life, that someone might disappear. In the new Romania, a fallen one could suffer a mysterious reversal of health during her next hospital visit. Far worse would be to survive as one of the whispered half a million souls seized via internal deportation. You could wake up in a labor colony. Lydia peered over the edge of the cup to see if there were a storm coming, an ill wind blowing against her cheek. She stared into my eyes, seeking some sort of recognition, some hint of confirmation. I wanted to tease my mother about it, but when Lydia saw this on my face, she asked if I wanted my coffee red, too. I refused. Even then, I was very secretive, very private, didn't want to share my life with anybody. I never wanted to believe that my fate was already written, because I was afraid it would be true. Immersed in his government papers, my father, Iordan Petre Barila, would have nothing to do with this prostii, this nonsense, whatsoever. Soothsaying was frowned upon by the government. Whenever he saw Lydia in conference with my mother, he only shook his head. As ministru, he was a key member of the Socialist Republic of Romania's Central Committee. Half Bulgarian and half Romanian, he grew up with grenades around his waist, but no shoes. During the Spanish Civil War, he was shot in the upper left leg, the hunk of flesh cut from him the size of a soup can in order to include the bullet, without anesthesia. He'd then come back and fought alongside my mother in the Divizia Tudor Vladimirescu, a special Romanian unit formed in the Soviet Union to overthrow Axis control of Romania and fascism in general. Finished with Romania, they'd swept the fascisti from Hungary to Czechoslovakia. Sometimes, he'd come to see me, his namesake daughter, after I was asleep during the many long nights he worked late at party meetings or returned halfway to morning from visiting factories as far off as Brasov. He'd bring me tiny treats, bonbons, Romanian pearl-shaped candies in a small metal box, or, my favorite, Soviet Mishka chocolates rolled in pretty papers adorned with pictures of two or three bears. In Russia, my father whispered to me in his gruff, sweet voice, all bears were nicknamed Mishka, Mikey. Other than these precious moments, I knew it would be wrong to expect my parents to have much more time for me. Ekaterina, my revolutionary journalist mother, was forever charging ahead with the surge of current events. Imprisoned at 16 in Târgu Mureș for distributing handbills, she rose to fame as a news correspondent covering the war to reunify Korea. One early morning, she came and stood in my doorway before heading off to her job as editor-in-chief of Allure, Forward. When she looked around my room, it wasn't just a look. The shadows of our two bodyguards passed behind her. She leaned over, and I thought she was going to kiss me. Instead, she said,
"Be grateful someone will make your nice bed. The furniture in our old house was made by political prisoners."
I tried to picture our old house, but all I could see was Lydia's rainbow of coffee cups, white, green, pink, yellow, blue, with small matching saucers. I remembered Lydia's blonde hair and very large hands as she turned the cup in her powerful palm. I tried to see the figure she saw, but I couldn't. Like the rest of Bucharest, we were wide asleep, unsuspecting of the dangers of the mist that was slowly encircling us. Back then, we hadn't yet seen the scintilla, the sparkle of the monster Nicolae Ceaușescu was to become. Strike that. The monster, I, was to become.